that Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, and they just disagree on how.
We're going to get across that wasteland, and we're going to do it together.
Fallout. All episodes available now on Prime Video.
Here's Miller and Condon.
Ken Miller. Trent Condon. Miller and Condon on 1460 KXNO. And now on 106.3 FM.
All right, good morning, everybody. Welcome to Miller and Condon. It's Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3 KXNO. Trent Condon, Ken Miller, as we get our work week underway here for the next couple of hours talking sports with you. Thanks for tuning in this morning. BMW of Des Moines guest list. It's been a couple of weeks since we've spoken with our friend Scott Dockerman from The Athletic. He has been very busy pumping out a bunch of content over there. We'll get into a lot of that coming up here with Doc. It's about a little half hour or so from right now. Matt Snyder's on vacation. Ryan Fagan from the Sporting News will pinch hit for Snyder. Ryan Fagan covers Major League Baseball for the Sporting News. He will join Trent and I at 11:05. And then Nick Olson, who was very busy, along with the Cyclone Media, covering a bunch of events, recruiting stories, one after another at CycloneAlert.com. And Nick Olson will join us, and he will opine on that, maybe the latest, if there is to be any more movement on T.J. Otzelberger's roster. We haven't spoken with Nick since A.J. Green made it official that he is going to stay in the NBA draft. So that's the BMW Des Moines guest list. Before we get out of here, we'll get Trent's plays of the day. Circus Sports sponsors it. How was your weekend?
Pretty good, yeah. We had the birthday party, had the inflatable in the backyard. It went well, so 13 girls run around the backyard being crazy, and no injuries, nothing like that.
That's good.
Yeah, that was positive. Yep. Never know with those big inflatables, but yeah, we had a great time.
So what did that set you back? What does that cost to rent? I have no idea.
It was like
a couple hundred bucks?
Yeah, $350, something like that. So it
was
for
the whole weekend?
Well, we got it Friday night, yeah, and they picked it up Sunday morning, yeah, it was worth it. You know, you look at some of the rentals, you go some different places, and it gets pricey all of a sudden. Yeah. We're kind of going back and forth, it's a little more than we were thinking, but you know what? She'll remember that one
absolutely
for her whole life. So,
and it was in your backyard,
right?
Which is good in its own right. So let's get into the sports from over the weekend. You know, again, kind of thought Boston would put up a little bit more of a fight. Thought Golden State would probably get out, you know, get on the airplane with the series tied one apiece. They'd be, you know, up against it if they didn't. But my oh my! I mean, Trent, this is 52-50 at halftime, and then look out below.
Well, and there was that stretch where Golden State opened it up a little bit in the third quarter, and it got to six. And you saw Steve Kerr, and he was mad. Steve Kerr from the get-go, you saw, was in that game.
Mm-hmm.
And he was hanging out at half court.
Yep. I mean, pacing.
A couple of feet on the floor a few times. He was as locked in as you're going to see an NBA coach. And there was that point. I think it was 68-62, I think is the six-point deficit that Boston saw. And Kerr told his guys, get up. And you could tell he was fuming. And right after that, shots started falling, and by the end of the third quarter, the Jordan Poole shot.
Trent, come on.
Steps past the three-point line. Yeah, you see half quarters and guys on the run.
Yeah.
You hoist it up there, and guys hit that shot.
Sure.
That was basically a step back.
I know.
From 40 feet.
I know.
It just, you don't do that. He did that.
At that time, it was, you know what, let's go see what's Cubs cards. Let's finish that game off.
And that's exactly where I was. And watched extra innings and watched that one finish up because you knew it was over. And flip back a couple of times, but it was just Golden State's night. The shots continued to go. I love that moment, though, at the end of the quarter with Steph kind of smiling behind Jordan Poole. And then they see each other and they kind of lock eyes. And he comes up and gives him a high five. And it was something, because I am sure that they work on that, you know, that they're screwing around together and they're doing those kind of, hey, you think you can hit a step back from half court? And he hit that to end the quarter. And just that moment where they needed Jordan Poole. If they're going to win this series.
It didn't happen in the first game.
No. Yep. And go back even to the Western Conference Finals. It's not the Jordan Poole. Certainly we've seen at times.
Yeah.
He's had some struggles.
Early in the playoffs. Yep. He was better. I agree.
And with Clay struggling.
What's wrong there? Is it the injuries of back-to-back years that he's missed for the most part? I mean,
right.
Because he's not the same player.
No. But also, I mean, the elimination game of Dallas, he had 32.
Well, he does have them,
And you still have to guard him. It's not like, you know, I've heard the theory.
But you expected when the ball left his hand before training, you thought, oh, that's good.
He's still not at a spot, though, where he's unplayable. Mm-hmm. Even when he's struggling with the shot, he's still
have to guard him. Saying put him on the bench.
Because there's that theory out there that if it continues this route, he has too much goodwill. He has built up enough equity where even if he is struggling.
Just like you just said. I mean, every now and then, he's still got, he still, you know, can turn the clock back a little bit. What did he finish last night? 12?
11.
11.
In a game where you win by 20 or plus minus is zero.
Yeah.
Something to keep in just in the back. I'm not freaking out. Mm-mm. I'm not going to go hot take artists and say, you got to bench Klay Thompson. No.
What did you think of the official? One of the big talkers today is Draymond Green, them letting him off the hook and not teeing him up for the second time in the game. You know what? And I'm glad they went to Steve Javy. The ABC crew went to Steve Javy, who's their NBA official. And he's really good, by the way. And he admitted, and like we know who's on the cusp of getting tossed,
right?
And I had no problem with that. I didn't think it was egregious.
No,
I mean, he's certainly been worse.
Well, he has, and that's what you're going to get with Draymond, right?
That's his game.
He's revved
an agitator.
Up. Yeah, those RPMs are always in the red,
right?
And there's going to be times that it tops out, but there's also times he's already got one, and you have to look at that as official and. Take that aside.
You don't want to take him out of a finals game. If this is game 41,
he's gone.
He's gone.
Right. He's running, but that's different. Uh-huh. Go back to the Cleveland championship where Draymond's not there for the final game because of LeBron coaxing him into getting that and ultimately how that turned out and how that played out. So, officials, and it doesn't matter if you're talking about a technical and giving a guy a second or if a guy's got a fifth foul and giving him the sixth or in college and high school, fourth and giving him the fifth. Officials know.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't know, I think that's a bigger problem. Call it the way you'd always call it. No, that's just not the way that
not
you officiate.
In the final. It wasn't egregious.
Not in general. I don't think in general. If it's game 41 and it's down to the wire and you're making that decision, same kind of thing. You have to know time and space. You have to understand that as an official. Mm-hmm. It's a part of the game. It's a part of officiating. So I was with you. I had no problem at all with it. You do adjust. You do have to change. It is not black and white. The same thing. Oh, it was a foul, but there's 20 minutes left in the game. That's not the way it is.
Right.
Live in reality. I'm always about reality. It's great in theory to have those ideas, but that's not the world we live in. You have to understand that different circumstances lead to different calls, and I think they made the right
I'm totally
night.
With you on that, Trent. Could not agree with you
more.
And
maybe because we won a longer series.
Well, we do, and we're going to get one. Now is it so one apiece as they head back to Boston. So Wednesday. And then the relatively quick turnaround.
Finally.
But that's it, though. Yeah. I mean, they have that the Wednesday, Friday, and then we go back to the pace that we're on right now for the remaining games as they stretch us out, which is just fine by us.
Kind of wild, though, right, that they play Wednesday, Friday, but they don't play on the weekend. They play again and then on Monday.
Yeah, right, because of the two off days. Yeah, that is weird.
I understand wanting to stay away from Saturday night.
Yeah, but Sunday night?
Right. Wouldn't it make more sense to go Tuesday Friday,
or
Tuesday,
Sunday? Or Tuesday, Thursday? Yeah, I don't know.
We're not TV executives.
No, but you want Sunday night.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think you have to be the TV. What else is on Sunday night that they're staying away from on ABC? I mean, I'm asking you.
America's Funniest Home Videos?
Maybe. A rerun?
Right.
Of that. You know what was really enjoyable this past weekend was Cubs Cards.
It was, yeah.
It was really fun.
Watched a lot more than I anticipated.
I did, too. I did not see. So I watched the first couple innings on Friday, and then I got busy for the rest of the afternoon. So I didn't see the Cardinals back. Blow them out. Yeah, because it was the Cubs were up early Thursday night, and then watched both games on Saturday night. Certainly the whole game on Saturday afternoon. I was in and out watching hockey on Saturday night, and then last night Sunday night baseball. It's a fun game. Look, the Cardinals won the series, if you want to call it that, 3-2. But Saturday night and Sunday night. They had to go to extra innings. So it's not like the Cubs rolled over. I mean, the Cardinals are a really good baseball team.
They are.
With some really difficult decisions, what they're going to do with these young guys once they get some of their guys back. But this is a fun team to watch. I heard a stat. You know what it was? It was Rick Morrissey wrote about this. You know, the difference in the two markets. The Cubs are seemingly taking the year off, right? They're rebuilding.
It's rebuilding.
Air quote, rebuild. Cardinals never do that. Cardinals are a small market team, relatively speaking. I did not know this, that has been since you have to go back to 2007 for the last time for the Cardinals had a losing record at the end of the year.
Wow.
Can you imagine?
No.
Man, I know I came up with, death taxes Cardinals in the postseason.
Yeah.
It's kind of accurate, right?
It is.
2007?
That's
since
nuts.
The last time they had a losing record? I mean, I guess Cardinal fans are a little bit spoiled by the results of this franchise. My God,
Goldschmidt, the hitting streak finally comes to an end.
Yeah, it did.
But he is just locked in.
Mm-hmm.
You can see that.
He
from
had
the
a good
get-go.
Weekend. You know who else too? Bader. My God, he hits the crap out of the baseball at Wrigley Field. They can't get him off the base paths.
No, not at all.
And that hair too. I don't know who's the hair. Him and his teammate Donovan. Or is it Donahue?
No, it's Donovan.
Donovan, right?
Brendan Donovan. Yeah,
the kid they brought up, and they got a decision to make with him because he looks as though he belongs with Tyler O'Neill out. But boy, those dudes got some hair. those two and Bo Bichette. I've got hair envy here this morning.
I can tell. I can tell. Yachty, looking old, isn't he?
He is, but you know who's not? Wainwright.
No, not at all.
Wainwright continues to pitch as you know what. Yachty's come to the end. Pujols has come to the end.
Yeah.
They walk away after this year. Did they march into the Hall of Fame together? We know Pujols is a first balloter. Is Yachty? He's got to be
first ballot.
Man, he best catcher of his era. Okay, yeah. Buster Posey fans, I hear you.
Mm-hmm. But he's right there.
Right there. Salvador Perez fans, he's better. His numbers are better.
He's got, 8 years on him, too, before Sal catches up. But, yeah, first ballot. It doesn't feel like it to me.
You're not alone, by the way. You're not alone.
Hall of Famer, yes.
At some point.
First ballot, no.
Right.
That's where I would be without really digging
him,
deep.
Make him, you know, tick up the ladder as the years go by.
Year he'll one, 60%.
There. Yeah, he'll get there.
Year two,
71,
he's up to 70.
Right? Oh,
and then
so
the
30,
and then he breaks it.
I could see that happening. I could see that happening. But this Cardinal team, they're playing exceptionally well. The Padres did them a favor.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a hell of a race. Got a hell of a race in the Central at the top of that division. Brewers a half a game up as they get set to begin play here today. And the Cardinals have a game in hand. When do those two teams play next?
Ooh.
Cubs Cards is going to be appointment TV down the stretch. Let me get the schedule in front of me for the Brewers and the Cardinals.
So they play a two-gamer late in the year, 27th and 28th of September. But there's two more series after that. Milwaukee finishes with the Marlins and the D-backs. Advantage?
Wow. Yeah.
And before that, the Reds.
Mm-hmm.
With four. Well, the Reds, as we've talked about, are at least a competent major league team, not opposed to what they were.
No, Brewers will host St. Louis 2 weeks from today. They begin a four-game series. So they've got a lot of games to play amongst each other. This is going to be a heck of a fight because right now, if I had to get into my app and bet my money, I think I'm wrong. I don't think the Brewers are going to prevail.
No.
And this Cardinal team, there's just something about them.
The offense for the Brewers still has issues.
Mm-hmm. Although they hit home runs.
Yelich is getting a tick better, but it's still obviously...
No, he's not the same guy.
No, not even close.
Right.
Not even close to what he was. We've been waiting for them just kind of... that offense to kind of catch up with the pitching. But even the pitching, you know, with the injuries that the Brewers have gone through right now, this is not the staff that I think we anticipated we were going to see.
Now, Hader's been great.
Right.
At the back of the rotation.
Yep.
Or at the back of the bullpen, rather. Yeah, Lauer's been good.
Mm-hmm.
Woodruff's DL'd, right, still?
I think he is.
Burns has been,
Peralta's been,
Because
we anticipated those guys. And in a year where Lauer's made kind of a leap, everybody else is kind of taking a step back. Even, well, certainly Woodruff, but even Burns to a certain extent has taken at least a half step back overall. I'm with you. I'd be on the Cardinals right now.
I think the Cardinals are the team to bet if we had to do it again right now. We'll see. They got a lot of games left to play between the two of them. So, which as a baseball fan, better for us, right? But the Cardinals are They've got my undivided attention, and I thought the Brewers were going to run away with this. All right, we'll go to the phone lines. Jeff has been patient. He will join the program, as he does periodically from time to time throughout the week. Hello, Jeff. Welcome. What's on your mind?
Well, let's talk a little in-depth NBA Finals last night. First of all, it's hilarious to me, TV analysts or these bozos out there. You know, you want to give Boston all this credit about their length and how they defend. How about Golden State to start the game and pretty much all the way through the game with their length and how they defend? If you guys watched, I mean, you guys said you guys were kind of going in and out, but if you watched the first quarter.
No, I saw that.
It was a moment there where you're like, okay, this is just how Boston defends. And let's not forget, Golden State, by the numbers, is the second best defensive team in the NBA. Mm-hmm. Celtics are number one.
Right.
Number two. Let's talk about Steph Curry. Everybody wants to throw Steph Curry under the bus, and, well, he didn't do nothing in the second half in the first game. How about last night? How did he do last night?
He flipped it around. He had 10 or 11 after the first quarter and then really got going and didn't play in the fourth.
He didn't have to play in the fourth. Maybe those haters were watching Holy Moly on ABC. I don't know. Maybe they missed it. But one of his plays, it's called a show and go, and this is what really upset the Boston coaching staff. So he goes up on a pick and roll. I believe it was Tice. It's called a show and go, where you just kind of show, and then you run off. Well, you can't run off Steph Curry. So then Curry hits it from about 25. And then two possessions later, I don't know how you lose Steph Curry in transition. Golden State is at their best, and where they can win is when they get a turnover and they push it in transition. For some reason, you can't lose Steph Curry in transition. All of us know that. That's in the scouting report. I don't know how that happened. Number three, you guys touched base on Klay Thompson. Here's what I see. Boston's doing a phenomenal job in the scouting report running Klay off the three-point line. So what is Klay not the best at? His ball handling, shooting off the bounce, shooting a mid-range, or shooting a fadeaway. I'm not saying he can't make it. What I'm saying is that's not his game. Now, if you remember a couple years ago when he put up 60, he dribbled 11 times. Klay dribbled 11 times in the first quarter. So I just think they got to go back to the basics with Klay. I'm not nervous. I mean, Trent kind of said, oh, you know, there could be people out there saying to maybe bench him or do this, do that. Again, if you watch last night, when the game was out of hand, was Klay Thompson in the game? Yeah, he was. You know why? Because they're trying to build his confidence.
Get him going. Yep.
Get him going for game three and beyond. I thought Klay did very well defensively last night. They were praising Klay Thompson up and down defensively. It's just going to take a couple go down the hoop. You're going to see it in game three. They need Klay. If you remember, we talked about it Friday night. If they're going to win the championship, they're going to need Klay to step up more than just one game. They need him consistent to give him 15 to 18 points. Thanks, guys.
Jeff, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Well, we got a series. That's the biggest takeaway from the game last night. Look, Klay Thompson was 1 for 8 last night from behind three. You can't bench him. Anybody that's calling for him to be benched. But you watch him.
Yes.
So absolutely watch him.
And Gary Payton made a huge difference.
Oh, and you know what he did that on the defensive end of the floor as well?
Hitting that three, obviously. Okay. Because they said before game one, he still couldn't lift his arm all the way up.
Oh.
They
showed that shot again from the Memphis series. Man, that was vicious.
It was. Dylan Brooks.
Got him good.
Yeah.
Holy mackerel.
But to hit that shot, all right, at ease. And then what he does defensively. And him flying around and him and Draymond together. Just the way that they're able to come out and hedge and then switch. And it completely changes what they are defensively. And as Jeff just said there, we talk about Boston's defense all the time. But you've made sure to mention a lot, too.
They're both.
Golden State's really good, too.
Yeah.
Second in the league in defensive efficiency this year. This is also a really good defensive
team. Yeah, you
hear
Golden State and you think three-pointers going in. You don't think
splash
about
brothers. Yeah, that's where your mind goes. Uh-huh. But this is also an excellent defensive team. And with Peyton out there, it ratchets it up to a different level. Iguodala gave it a go, but they're so much better with Peyton as opposed to Andre.
No, they are. Trent, and I go back to that injury. You know, I didn't realize that when he fell to the floor, that his elbow took the brunt of it. I mean, I was watching the club to the head,
right
in the neck bend the way it did. And then when he hit the floor, I mean, the elbow, I did not know that. But they do need him. They certainly do need him. And defensively last night, he was terrific. So we've got ourselves a series. The series price. Boston is now back to favorite, right? Slight favorite?
Let's take a look here because I just had the baseball ones up. I'm going to give you these division odds. I think you're going to be surprised also. Let's take a look here. Series prices in the NBA as I'm scrolling through.
I'll say very tight favorite.
Boston, you said,
yep, favorite. Boston's got to be a slight favorite.
All right.
No, you know what? Golden State's a slight favorite.
Let's go. I'm clicking around here, as always, of course. There we go. All right, found it.
Golden State, tight. It's really tight either way.
This is DraftKings.
Yeah.
Boston, minus 115. Golden State, minus 105. You're not getting plus money on either of them.
I don't know about that.
You had a bet right now. What would you make?
Golden State.
You would.
I think I would.
After
I think, look, here's what I think.
You are such a creature of the moment.
I know.
I think, gets you every time.
I think
this is why you do not bet day to day.
No, I know. I hate it. I won't do it. Right. I think that we're going to get a split in the next two. I think that this series is going to be two apiece. And if that's the case, and that's how I see it, I think Golden State will prevail.
It's fair. Fair way to look at it. I'm still on Boston.
Are you?
I'm not relenting. From what I've
seen.
Look,
I cash a bigger ticket if Boston wins.
Oh, okay.
But I think Golden State will win the series.
You ready for some baseball futures?
Yeah, what's the point spread Wednesday, first of all? Did you see that?
I did not. Let me bring it up here.
Celtics a slight favorite?
We have, yeah, Boston's going to be favored.
But
three
not
and
my,
a half.
More than I thought.
3.5.
Okay.
Going to be the number there. Baseball futures.
All right, here we go.
You're right. It is still Milwaukee the favorite.
Mm-hmm.
How big of a favorite? What do you think you can get the Cardinals right now?
To win the division?
Win the division.
Oh, man. Plus one. I don't know. What is it?
195.
I was going to say 180.
So you can get the Cardinals at plus 195. That's juicy.
That is.
In fact, I had a $10 free bet that I just used on that. Thank you, DraftKings.
From DraftKings, okay.
Brewers minus 265. There's not a way in the world.
No.
I would bet that price. Now I also
now they might win, but not at that price.
Because before the season, we talked about it. We went through. I had 1-2 exact to finish. Brewers 1, Cardinals 2. So I already have that in my back pocket. I hedge at 195 with the Cardinals. I really like that right now. Let's go to the American League Central, where your favorite. Is not the team in first place.
Is it the White Sox again?
The White Sox minus 105.
So what do you get the Twins at? Trent, I watched your Twins knock the crap out of the baseball at Rogers Center over the weekend.
After being anemic in Detroit.
How many home runs did they hit? Now, I'm going to guess over the weekend, they had to hit 8, 9. They hit a bunch.
Had a couple yesterday.
Uh-huh.
Had Friday night a bunch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they probably had, 79, right in that range.
And they hit the ball well against Jay's pitching.
And in a team that was depleted with the bullpen, had four guys that were not able to make the trip, including Max Kepler, who offensively had been probably the second most consistent guy this year. And you go up there and take 2 or 3 against a Toronto team that was playing excellent.
They were red hot. They'd won 7 in
a row. Is that what it was?
Yeah. It was, yeah.
Going into Friday night. That's a big-time win.
No, it's good. That's a good series win for the Twins. But Chicago's still favored.
Minus 105 for the White Sox. The Twins plus 120.
You're getting it. There's a team favored that is below 500 on the 6th of June. Crazy.
They are 25-27, the White Sox are. The Guardians are now in front of them. In second place, a half game up. The Twins with a 4.5 game lead over the Guardians. I looked at the Tigers for a moment. They're 80-1. No.
What are the Twins to win the division?
Plus 120.
Okay.
I see the wheels turning over there.
Yeah, and the Astros are overwhelming in the West now?
Let's see. American League West. Yeah, minus 800.
The Angels have lost 11 in a row. Does Joe Madden, I mean, when does...
Well, we saw what happened to the Phillies against the Angels this weekend.
Right.
Girardi fired.
They won 3 straight.
You saw the Grand Slam, I'm sure.
Oh, my God.
That moment.
Yeah. That was crazy.
Bryce Harper, the elation in the crowd.
Well, it was him, too. Yes. I mean, you're the face of the franchise, right?
Absolutely.
It was
incredible.
Now, I didn't see it live.
Mm-hmm. Same, yeah. I just saw the highlight. But there was a view, basically, from a shot kind of on the side. And you see Harper. Just absolutely incredible. But yeah, the Angels, 11 losses in a row, plus 750. Astros are home free. National League West, the Dodgers, minus 280. Padres, plus 310. Giants 9-1.
Did they sweep? Was the Brewers pods a four game set or three? They won three.
Yeah.
So they swept them then over the weekend. Padres, and they're going to get Tatis back.
How about the National League East? Mets minus 360. Braves are back over 500, though.
Yeah, but they're not going to catch
it. Here come the Bravos.
I don't think so.
No. 7-2.
The Dodgers and the Mets was a fun series this weekend.
Finally, the American League East. Yankees minus 280.
They're a huge favorite.
3-1 for the Blue Jays. Not enough for me to.
Nope.
Like, even
they
think
won't
about
catch the Yankees. Are they the best team in baseball?
Yeah. And they can still get better. They can still get better.
Toronto can't pitch, Trent. Toronto cannot pitch.
The Rays at 12-1 is winking at me. Okay. If I was going to take a shot on somebody.
Well, yeah, if I was going to twist your arm, mm-hmm. I would tell you to bypass the Jays.
Yeah. 7.5 back for the Blue Jays. Rays are 8 back. Red Sox.
They're playing better. Back. I mean, they're 500.
Right. They're digging out of a hole.
Mm-hmm.
And they easily can still get in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And you want to see the Red Sox in the first round?
No.
Especially if Chris Sale's back, being Chris Sale.
As it stands today, are the three wildcard teams all out of the American League East? I think they are.
As it sits today?
As we get today. Because the Angels are no longer in the playoffs.
Yep, that's what it is. So your first round series would be Twins-Red Sox, gross, Blue Jays-Rays in the other division round. In the National League, it would be Brewers against the Giants and Padres-Cardinals with the wild card. Match up there. That'd be a good series. Padres, Cardinals?
Yeah, I'll say.
That'd be a real good one.
Cardinals are playing well. We will take a timeout. Scott Dockerman is going to join us. He covers Iowa, covers the Big Ten. He's their scheduling guru over at The Athletic. Look forward to catching up with Doc. We'll do that next. Ryan Fagan from the Sporting News is going to join us to kick off the second hour of the program. An Iowa State conversation. Big recruiting weekend in Ames this past weekend. Nick Olson was there. He will just tell us what he learned from the weekend when he joins us about 11:30. Miller and Condon underway on a Monday. It's Des Moines Sports Station, 106.golfer.com. All right, 10:35 on a Monday, Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3 KXNO. Let's get right to our first guest of the week. Scott Dockerman covers Iowa and the Big Ten and scheduling. Wears a lot of hats at The Athletic. We're grateful as subscribers for that. Hello, Doc, Trent, and Ken. How are you?
I'm great, guys. How are you this fine Monday?
Doing well. Doc, we got a lot of ground to catch up with you. I want to start with the you're seemingly the go-to guy when it comes to scheduling at The Athletic, or certainly one of them, and not necessarily just when it pertains to Iowa, but across college football. A lot of divisions are wrestling with the 8 or 9 games, and if it is 9, what do we do? What do you think? Will there be consensus, Doc? What seems to be the most likely that we see here after 2025, pursuant to how scheduling is handled?
Yeah, 9 games will not go away. That is one thing that is absolute going forward, and the large part of that is that the Big Ten's content and generate such high ratings that you just don't want to sacrifice any of that. There was some discussion early on in January, when the alliance was semi-consummated, that they would cut down to 8 games and then play, an ACC or Pac-12 opponent. But when you look at what the ratings generate for Big Ten versus what they do for those two leagues, it's not even close. I mean, there were 32 games involving Big Ten teams that had at least 3.5 million viewers, and the numbers, I think, are 6 and 4 for the other two, and none of those games involved just one another for the ACC. So the Big Ten was going to keep 9 no matter what. The question is, are they going to eliminate divisions? And it seems that that is the case, but to what format after that? That's where the questions lie, is how many protected games will there be? Will there be 1, 2, 3? My anticipation is that the discussion is going to center around between 2 and 3. And that's where it gets really dicey for teams like Iowa, where you could say that there really are 3 games that they really want to protect every year, and which one kind of goes if that's the case. So it's really going to be up to Gary Barta to kind of wave that flag if he wants to, and not give in too early and see if he can get that done. Otherwise, I think they could be centering on two for the Big Ten.
So, Doc, that, they will leave that up to the athletic directors to make that determination as to what rivals they want to remain? Who's ultimately going to make that decision?
It comes down to a conversation. I mean, the league office and ultimately Kevin Warren would make that final decision. But all those discussions are among the athletic directors, kind of like it was during Legends of Leaders when everything was deciphered and decided. And they kind of come to that conclusion, and there is a vote. And most of the time, it's never going to be like a 8-6 vote on something like this. So they'll be pretty much unanimous to do what's best in the Big Ten's offering. So that's what's going to end up happening. And based on my conversations in Chicago with some of the ADs, that, you know, a Penn State, for instance, was like, well, we just don't really have any interest in protecting any rivals. And, you know, and you got Maryland and Rutgers that are maybe in the same boat. But then you have Iowa and Minnesota that, you know, have two or three, you know, especially Iowa has three. So, you know, and they're not going to just put it down to one because, let's face it, is Michigan really not going to face Michigan State every year?
Right.
So I think it's going to be two. I even wrote that what they should do is just protect the ones that need protecting. It doesn't matter the number. But we'll see. They have time, and they're not really trying to rush this the way they did with Legends of Leaders.
Doc, one thing that really jumped out from the Charlie Jones decision I found very interesting was the SEC has talked about putting in a mandate in place. Mm-hmm. If you're going to transfer within your conference, that's fine. We're not going to do that. We can't go through spring football and then do that. Same kind of thing. Whatever it may be, whatever the sport may be, some kind of drop dead date. You can still transfer in the conference. We're not doing that, but we're not going to allow you to go through spring practice and then a couple months later suit up against a conference rival. Do you like that idea, or is it putting yet another hurdle there that hasn't been, that'll be difficult to negate?
I do. I think it makes sense. And it's you know, February 1st for the SEC, and they put that in. And again, yeah, as you mentioned, there are players who left different SEC schools for other ones. And it does help. And I agree that, you know, you have a player that goes through spring and then all of a sudden, voila, ends up on another roster. I mean, it did benefit Iowa slightly when Oliver Martin did that, and they did actually play that year. Mm-hmm. But you don't really want that happening. Now, there wasn't a real priority on that when I was there. We did ask about it, and it wasn't really a big topic, you know. And I think the media rights arrangement and divisional play and overall NIL takes precedent. But that said, this is something that probably should happen for the Big Ten because, you know, what's going to happen, you know, when the number two Ohio State quarterback going through the spring decides to transfer to Penn State or Michigan.
Right.
I think we'll find out really quick that rule is going to be enacted. So just give it some time.
Indeed. So let's stay on the Charlie Jones theme, Doc. How big of a hole is his departure? He's going to be a Boiler, but won't be a Hawk. How big of a blow is that?
I think it's actually a bigger blow for the offense than it is for special teams. I mean, I know he was outstanding in that area and was Big Ten returner of the year, but I think they've got other candidates who can mitigate that quite a bit. And as we've seen in the past, I mean, Amir Smith-Marset ranks second all time in the kickoff return average. Desmond King was one of the better kick returners they've ever had. So I think somebody like Cooper DeJean or Arlen Bruce are going to be able to walk in there and do a nice job, maybe Riley Moss as well. But offensively, I think that's where some of their challenges lie, is because they don't have a lot of depth. And you look in the spring, and most of the receivers that were out there were walk-ons most of the time. I mean, Arlen Bruce and Charlie Jones were the only two scholarship guys that got to really get a lot of snaps. So I think that's something that I would consider very concerning, is that you had a guy that's been in the offense for several years, 3+ years, and then he leaves, and he's, you know, a vital member, has a lot of snaps from last year. Now, in performance, probably not as big of a deal, but I think just overall being on the field and being able to do certain things, I think it will, you know, hurt Iowa's offense and passing attack.
So we know Reganey, he can do some things in the slot. He's made plenty of plays throughout his career. Arlen Bruce and Johnson, you think those guys are going to take leaps. Out of that next tier, and there's only three other guys to even talk about, Vines, Barodi Brecht, and Bostic, who would you take out of that group to even have a chance here, or are you going walk-on? You're going away from the scholarship guys and looking for that fourth and fifth receiver?
it's strange, Trent, because I don't know that I could just say this one receiver works because they play kind of exclusive positions or close to it. Mm-hmm. You know, Brody Brecht is tall and fast and, you know, kind of an X receiver, and Charlie Jones didn't necessarily play that position very much. So I think he may be the next guy in, but he's also not necessarily that position, so he might need to move some guys around, and sometimes they do that and sometimes they don't. It just depends on the player. I really want to see more out of Bostic. I mean, coming in, he's really fast. He's kind of reminds me of Amir, and if he can showcase that kind of speed, I don't think he's got that much speed, but if he can play like that, then you got to get somebody like that on the field. He does play more the Z position, so I would expect five, maybe more, to actually get snaps until they kind of settle on a rotation. I think Kaden Wiegen is going to have a real opportunity as a punt returner and play in that role that Charlie Jones had, because Iowa has used a lot of pretty good walk-ons over the years. I mean, Nick Easley was really good. Riley McCarron, both of those two got, you know, looks at the NFL. And then, you know, Charlie Jones did a really nice job too. So my expectation is there's going to be five, maybe six guys that get a real good crack at playing some time.
Doc, I really enjoyed the piece. I believe it published yesterday on the incoming freshman and who may see playing time right away. I'll tell you, look, the guys that have their name on the marquee already, right? Wampka and, of course, Graves, etc. Knew those guys, but I didn't know the story of this, and I hope I've got his name right. Entringer, is that how you say it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Played both ways. Receiver and a DB, but man, oh man, you salivate a little bit when you got a 6'2 defensive back. You compared him perhaps to Mari Spave, who you could leave out on an island, and you knew he was going to make a play or make the tackle. What about this entering your kid? Could he play right away or at some point this year?
I think there's a really good chance. I could see him ending up on special teams, and he might have the opportunity to kind of work in as, you know, this year it's going to be really tough, no matter how good you are, to get in that defense, because there's just so deep. Mm-hmm. And the two that are there right now on the back, and, you know, and Wampa and Hall are very, very good. But I think in Entringer has a real chance to make an impression right away and potentially get in, you know, maybe in 2023 he could make the depth chart or close to it, in 2024 maybe even start. I could see him ending up on special teams, and whether that's as a full-timer or a guy in four games, but I think he's got a really good opportunity. And then the other one, Deshaun Lee, who is the late signing, and watching him, he's really fascinating to me because he carries himself a lot like Desmond King, and I'm not going to compare him on the field to Desmond. That's rare air, but just his tenacity and toughness, and, you know, he covers guys, I thought, kind of like Manny Rugamba. So he's got a chance, too. It's just that's such a deep secondary, and yep, it's hard for guys to get in there unless there's holes.
Cooper DeJean, one of those guys, you wonder about his spot. If wide receiver continues to be an issue, you put Cooper DeJean over there, play a little wide receiver. He's such a playmaker. We anticipate he's going to be returning kicks. Just watching him at the high school level, he's become kind of this almost mythical feature out there of what he could do. Could you see something, and if it's not DeJean, somebody from the defensive side of the ball moving over and at least putting some kind of package together?
A package? No. Somebody moving over and playing receiver? Sure, I could see that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, how 2016 was such a dreadful year in the passing offense for Iowa. It was as bad as any year I could ever remember, you know, in the history of football. Not just a little bit hyperbolic there, but all of us were clamoring for Desmond King to slide over, yep, and play some wide receiver. That didn't happen. Now, what I could see is a backup, you know, and I won't even mention names just because I don't want to get a rumor started or something, but, you know, I could see somebody on the second or even the third team defensive back saying, you know what, there's an opportunity over there at wide receiver. I'm going to give that a shot first. Maybe even give it maybe some of these incoming guys, you know, even an entringer, you know, for instance, could say, let me give that a shot. Mm-hmm. See what I could do. And if not, then, you know, okay, well, there's always next year and the rest of your career. But Greg Maben kind of went that path. Josh Jackson went that path. And it would behoove Iowa, if they feel like they are so depleted at that position, to exhaust all opportunities, potentially even among running backs. But That said, Iowa doesn't do packages very well for individual players. We've seen that over the years.
Doc, last thing for me. What when we look back at this year, what will we have seen from Aaron Graves in his freshman campaign? How much will he contribute, do you think? I mean, you look at the kid, my God, he looks like he's an upperclassman already, physically. What do you expect?
Well, let's say that there are very few injuries, so it's a true rotation, mm-hmm. and there's no issues there. And I'll say he's going to play probably 15 snaps a game. And that's with a defensive line that is as deep as I've ever seen there. I mean, they can legitimately go 8, 9, 10 deep and not feel like they're really having a lot of drop-offs. So I still think he's good enough where he'll get on the field and play. He's just that dominant. He's that physically gifted at this stage of his career. He looks like a 21-year-old as opposed to a kid walking on campus for the first time. So I think that's I think he'll get more in the 15 range, and then, you know, next year you won't have Noah Shannon or John Wagoner, and you'll find a path to probably, if not start, certainly rotate heavy snaps at that point.
Doc, you also dip your toe in from time to time on the Iowa State side of things, and a couple weeks ago the Iowa State caravan came through Cedar Rapids. You stopped on out. Your biggest takeaway or two after hearing from the coaches and athletic director Jamie Pollard when the Cyclones were on the east side of the state?
Yeah, and I'm just finished actually their State of the Program story that comes out next Monday. Oh, so, nice. I do some Iowa State, and I thought what was kind of fascinating to me, a couple of areas. One is Jamie Pollard was, you know, kind of emphasized that there won't be divisions in the next iteration of the Big 12, you know, with the 12 teams, and you know, he's not real sure what, you know, if there is going to be any protected rivalries, or if there are, what the number is going to be. And so I thought that was kind of fascinating. The other part is, and this is just being kind of being in the money weeds, but just the fact that he didn't have to borrow any money from the university to get through that COVID year and was able to pay out of reserves and do all the juggling that he was able to do, I thought was really impressive by Iowa State. And it kind of shows you the difference between the two schools, where Iowa, you know, was $45 million in the hole. So I think, you know, kudos to him, but I think it also shows Iowa State's on pretty firm financial ground, and it's going to need some of that when it goes forward in the Big 12, and just depending on what the media rights looks like. So that's really kind of my primary takeaways there. In talking to Matt Campbell for the State of the Program story, which again airs next week or runs next week, I was struck by how positive he was about certain players and positions. And obviously, you know, we all know with Iowa State some of the strengths. You know, Will McDonald is going to be, outside of Will Anderson, probably the best pass rusher in the country. But I think there's a lot of positivity around Hunter Deckers. And the backfield, Cartavicious Norton, I think, could be, or Cartavious, I'm sorry, Norton, could be, I think he might be the next in line with, you know, after Breece Hall.
Wow.
So look for him to, like Breece Hall did as a true freshman. He kind of elevated there in the first month, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if Norton does that.
Interesting. Well, I think there's an opportunity there for him. I really do. Jirel Brock is going to go into the year as the expected starter, but we shall see. Doc, great stuff. That comes out next Monday. Anything hitting this week you'd like to talk about?
Yeah, I'm ranking the 12 games right now for the Iowa schedule, just kind of by appeal, and I'm looking into some Iowa recruiting statewide on some things. So that's part of our recruiting blitz coming out this week, but I don't have a day set yet. But so, yeah, it's going to be a busy week here. It usually is. We don't take days off, very often. And so, yeah, but it should be a fun one.
It's about this time of year we usually have this conversation. We'll finish on this. Will there be a night game at Kinnick?
Well, yeah, Nevada's a night game. I mean, they already scheduled.
Oh, they
that.
Did? Yeah. Oh, okay. So what time's that, 6? I mean, a real one. Is there a Big Ten game that goes underneath the lights?
I don't know. You know, that's the thing. I mentioned to everybody that Fox is the number one primary rights holder, and Fox is the one that determines that the big noon kickoff is their primetime game, is their main game. So you would look 4 or 5 years ago, you would have said Michigan, Iowa under the lights for sure.
Yeah.
Unless it's an ABC game, if it's on Fox, it's going to kick off at 11. So
BTN still has the 6 o'clock window, do they not?
Yeah, and then that's why they that's why the Nevada game is
going to be gotcha.
At 8 p.m. on September 17th.
Good stuff, Scott Dockerman. Appreciate it as always, Doc. Have a great week. Talk to you next Monday. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Good to talk to you. Scott Dockerman, as we catch up on the Hawks, well, fascinating. So if they're going to stay with two for sure, so who are you going to get? Who gets left out? I mean, Floyd's as good a trophy as there is in college football.
Nebraska has to have one.
You have to.
Are we going back to the well again where Wisconsin's left off like
it
was when the
leaders... If I had to bet, and who doesn't want to see that game every year?
Garibaldi, you've been there a long time. This is something that your athletic department needs. This is something that your fan base
wants. Die
on
this hill, is what you're saying?
Use that equity that you have and say we get... All right, if everybody else wants two, we want three. Because Indiana and Purdue, they still get to play every year. They are the protected rivals in each different divisions. They allow that. So allow Iowa to have three. If everybody else gets two, Iowa can have three. Why not?
I totally agree with you.
Those
rivalry
games are
going to leave out.
Right. They're too good to leave out.
Right.
The Minnesota one's the most important to me.
Because of where you grew up.
But you go to Dubuque, and it's Wisconsin.
Yeah.
You go to Omaha and Council Bluffs, it's Nebraska. And here, it's Iowa State. But everybody has theirs. And Iowa, it is a different university than most. Rutgers, just make a Maryland. Right?
Well, look, there's a reason that very quickly they identified Nebraska and Iowa as a game that's going to take place on Black Friday.
Exactly.
Nebraska so that's
had
not
a history.
Going away.
Right. And you just... That's locked in.
Yeah, so it comes down to Minnesota or Wisconsin, and you don't want to give up either.
No, absolutely not. And you'll still play those teams often, more often than the old setup.
Right, but play it every year.
Every year. It has to happen.
We are running out of hour. We got to get a break in. Let's do it. It's Miller and Condon, 106.
Barahill.com.
Hi, Miller and Condon. Welcome back. Very short segment here to finish the first hour of the program. So Chris Andrews, our friend at the South Point, hopefully we'll get him tomorrow. They release their games of the year in college football, and the game that means the most of us, obviously, is the Cy-Hawk. They, at the South Point, set the number at Iowa as a 13-point favorite. Safe to say, briefly.
Yes. Chris responded to me after I put out the tweet with those lines and said... Within a few hours, they were already back to a touchdown.
That's crazy movement.
And when Chris puts those numbers up, he's not just allowing people to bet tens of thousands of dollars either. It's a pretty low limit.
Right.
I want to say maybe 1,500, something like that is the limit early in those games. That shows you how quickly and maybe how many people jumped on the Cyclones right away.
Unbelievable.
I'd like to have a Cyclone plus 13 ticket in my pocket right now.
We will switch gears. Baseball conversation. Ryan Fagan from South Point. Speaking of Iowa State, Nick Olson. He covers them for CycloneAlert.com. He'll join us at about 11:30. Trez play of the day from Circus Sports. That's the next hour of the program on Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3 KXNO.